Time to take a look at all those aches and pains and sprains and strains that may be bothering you, maybe one, or maybe you've got all of them. I hope not. Laurie Tyne Brody, Senior Physical Therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, Bill Boisenault, Associate Professor at the UW Medical School, our guest once again to talk about all of those issues, and certainly you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Forgot for a minute. 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call. We'll be glad to get you on. Lori, welcome back.
It's good to be back, especially nice to be back on such a beautiful day compared to a week ago.
Yeah, spring is back. Thank goodness.
Oh, hallelujah.
Hallelujah. And that means that there were a lot of people out this weekend working in the yard and doing things like me, putting in a pier maybe, a lot of lifting.
A lot of bicyclists out in our neighborhood this weekend.
We did some biking too this weekend and had a great time. And I'm seeing that more than one in four people report some back pain in the United States.
Yeah. Is that you today? Are you the one in between Jim actually, and Bill and I? Are you the one today,
I have
Larry?
A neck pain today.
Oh, okay.
I have it in the neck today. I can't turn my head the way I want to. But, Bill, that's amazing numbers.
It's big numbers. And actually, when you look at that's within a defined period of time, within the last 3 or 4 months, that will be the numbers. And lifetime prevalence is estimates anywhere from maybe 75 up to 85, 90% of people will have significant back pain. It's very common. It's the most common reason for patients coming to outpatient physical therapy practice. It's up in the top 10 reasons why people go see their physician. And it's very costly, time off from work and disability in terms of things we'd like to do for fun and leisure and things we have to do like yard work and putting in piers as well.
Yeah. Well, you folks aren't going to be out of a job anytime soon.
Unlikely. Unlikely. You know, what we really like to focus on is prevention, you know, helping people move correctly, lift, understand what their limits are, things like that, so that they can live, they can stay active longer. One of the problems we see is that somebody has a back problem, and so that keeps them from participating in their usual exercise or activities, and then they start to gain weight, and you start this whole downward spiral. So it's really important to try to stay healthy so you can continue participating in the things you like.
Well, speaking of back pain, Jennifer in Oconomowoc is on, and I think she might have some back pain. Jennifer, hi.
Hi there. Thank you. I had an accident a couple years ago and had some whiplash with my neck and had migraines and headaches, just constantly lived with it. The pain then has moved down my back below my shoulder blade and even down further than that. Traditional medicine didn't do anything for me besides, take the medicine. I went to a chiropractor about 5 months ago, and that immediately relieved my headaches. However, the stiffness and pain in my neck and back continued. Almost a week ago, I went and saw an acupuncturist and immediately felt relief from the pain. My question is, I've got two questions. I don't really understand the chiropractor. Do I continue with that? The acupuncturist told me the relief, the problem I'm having is in my circulation. And that is a problem that has run in my family. What can I do to prevent further problems?
Okay, well, in terms of your first question, and you continue with the chiropractic, it sounds like that helped you. You said nothing with the headaches.
Yeah.
But then it sounds like that's kind of where the improvement stopped, and you were left with other symptoms that were remaining.
Correct.
Generally, I think seeing a practitioner for anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks, a bit longer, is a good test of whether that type of treatment approach is going to help you or not. The fact you were getting improvement with the headaches warranted more than that. But I think within 4 or 5 months, and I would say it's no matter who you were seeing, that you stop seeing improvement, especially if there's no improvement over a 4 to 6 week period, it's time to try another approach. You see a different chiropractor, or you try a different approach like you did with the acupuncturist. So that'd be my thought in terms of the chiropractic care. And certainly you can discuss that with your chiropractor if you're still in touch with them. In terms of the acupuncturists and helping an underlying reason why with circulation, I don't think I can really explain to you in theory why it's working or what the connection may be. I'm not an acupuncturist. It's not like you went to the right place. And in terms of preventing future problems, are you talking about future problems with your neck or future problems with other things?
Circulation in general. My grandfather had problems with his legs and ended up having to actually have them amputated. And it just struck fear in me when she said circulation.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, in terms of circulation, I mean, there are things we can do to help enhance circulation and prevent circulatory problems. And everything from diet, activity. What happens with, for example, people with diabetes, they have significant circulatory problems. So if that's what your family member had, there are certain risk factors related to diabetes that you can have investigated and you can try to impact and minimize the potential of it happening to you. But there's lots of things that could compromise circulation. So a healthy diet, a good exercise, and physical activity program are crucial things related to circulation.
Yeah.
Encourage people to try non-traditional alternatives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, you trying non-traditional alternative medicine, as long as you go to someone who is licensed, if they are licensed practitioners, and that generally is who you want to look for first, so that there's some degree of certainty and assurity that they've had a certain degree of training, that they will recognize when you need to be seen by someone other than a practitioner as themselves, so that they'll be doing some degree of screening. Disciplines, professionals that are licensed, there are licensure boards that are governed through the state government. So you can go to the state government website and see if there's a licensing agency and contact them about that practitioner. So you want to be a good consumer. I'm all for alternative medicine, but you want to be a good consumer in terms of who you seek out and who you go to.
Yeah, good sense. Thank you very much for calling, Jen. Dan in Marshfield, your turn now. Hi, Dan.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Just calling, I'm going to take us all the way to the bottom of our body. For about a month and a half, I've had extreme pain in my heel, especially when I get up in the morning and try to, you know, move around. And people have told me that it's probably plantar fasciitis. I already have arch support, and it's trying to hopefully resolve this on my own without having to go in and see anybody. Is that an option?
Mm-hmm. Sure, it's an option. I guess the question I go back to is, why did you get arch supports in the first place? Do you have a history of foot problems?
They were bothering me some and went in, and doctors told me that I had flat feet, so then I got arch support.
Okay, how long ago was that?
Probably a year. I work construction on my feet a lot, concrete. So.
Okay. And were those custom-made arch supports? Okay. All right. And they're not worn out, to the best of your knowledge?
Correct.
Okay. And your boots are in good shape?
Yes.
Okay.
When I was doing some treadmill work more regularly than I had been, which is when this kind of flared up.
Okay. All right. That's what we look for, like the index event that may have started sort of a downhill spiral. Because before this, you were somewhat in homeostasis. Your activity level, the arch supports, they were kind of keeping everything in balance. Then something tipped the scales and you started having symptoms. So the treadmill activity is the likely culprit. So have you discontinued that?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. So what I would recommend is icing for your heel, stretching the calf muscles, especially with your knee bent and your toes pointed up toward the ceiling, to stretch the fascia in the bottom of your foot. If you don't have an additional heel cup, you might think about an additional heel cup in your boot and a night splint. You might go with a night splint at night if you're trying to deal with this on your own. There's a number of them. If you just Google that on the internet, a night splint for plantar fasciitis, there's, you know, 100 different versions of that. That's something you can try. And what that does is it puts that fascia on a nice long stretch all night long. It should be comfortable. Your toes shouldn't go numb. You shouldn't have more pain the next day. It should be a comfortable, very low load stretch. You can give that a try and see how you do.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Jim Packard, our in-house runner extraordinaire, is giving you the thumbs up.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he asked us last time about the night splint. Yeah. So apparently it worked. I forgot to check in with him about that.
It did work for Jim.
In-house testimonial.
Okay, very good.
And Jim does a lot of running.
He does. All right.
Roman in Wausau, your turn next. Hi, Roman.
Hi, good morning. I do a lot of running, too, or I did for 40 years, and I attribute that to my good health, and I'm here to say that if people follow some of the things that I've done, perhaps they can experience the same. These drugstores could go out of business as far as painkillers. Hair oil and toothpaste is about all I use them for lately. years ago, I got the Environment magazine, and I read in there where nitrates and nitrites in processed meats especially contributed to headaches, and I used to get terrible headaches. And I can tell you again that I haven't taken a painkiller, and you won't even believe this, for over 30 years for pain. And I, not that I haven't experienced a little pain, but one of the pain that I began to develop 2 years ago, my back began to bother. Painful to even get in and out of the car, so I went and had my back x-rayed, and the doctor told, after running two marathons and, like I say, jogging for 40 years, I had to give it up at the age of 75. But at any rate, I still had the pain. So I talked to two different people, and they both said, well, what you have to do is lay on your back, raise your feet stretched out straight about 5-6 inches off the floor and hold them there for 10 seconds, down for 10, up for 20, down for 10 seconds, up for 30. Continue that until you've held them up there for 60 seconds. Now, that sounds easy, but believe me.
No, it's not.
It's not easy.
Oh, no.
It gets to be easy after a while, and the pain leaves. Now I'm absolutely pain-free. I walk every day about 4 miles, very fast, and nobody wants to keep up with my wife and I. She had onset diabetes, because she was probably 60 pounds overweight. And she went on an immediate diet of salads and fast walking. She used to be a jogger also and had fought her weight all her life. She's absolutely gorgeous now, looks like a teenager, and she doesn't take anything for diabetes. But the pain is the thing we're talking about today. And anyone with back pain that wants to try that, just lay on your back, and it takes about 4.5 minutes total. 10 seconds up, down for 10, up for 20, down for 10, up for 30, et cetera, until you do it, hold them for a minute. And don't eat your processed meats with nitrates and nitrates, and maybe you'll get rid of all your pain and problem, and the drugstores will just be there for your hair oil and your toothpaste. And I won't need the hair oil much longer.
Well, Roman, thanks.
Thanks for sharing that. That's a great story, and it's a tribute to self-management of your problem. So Roman found something that worked for him. The exercise he described is a remarkably difficult exercise. It puts a lot of stress on your back, but he fought that battle and he won. That's not going to be the case for everybody, though.
Right, right. Yeah, the exercise he described for strengthening his abdominals and his back would fall in the category of core stabilization. And when you line your back and legs out straight and you lift your legs, that is an advanced exercise within that category of exercises. And if you allow your back to hyperextend as you lift your legs, which many people do if they don't have adequate abdominal strength, some people with back pain can get worse doing that kind of exercise. So if we've talked about for all these years, when you do an exercise, some muscle soreness is okay, but if you get any pain at sharp discomfort, you know, shooting, stabbing, pinching, it's not the right exercise for you. Mm-hmm. Or it's just too high level of an exercise for you, which could be the case for some folks.
Yeah, and we can give people exercises to build them up to the point where they can do an exercise like that.
Yes.
But but Roman was obviously in pretty darn good shape going into it to be able to do that.
Yeah, it was the ticket for him.
Yep.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault are our guests. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking physical therapy issues today with Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. Thanks for listening in. If you want to join in, the number to call 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And let's turn to David in Wittenberg next. Hi, David.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
It's really a pleasure to get through. I listen to you guys all the time, and I'm a big supporter of public radio. Well, you listen, I'm a 50-year-old on. I've got a separated shoulder. Currently, today, I'm a substitute mail route carrier, so I've got to use this right shoulder to shoot mail in the mailboxes. But that's the easy part. I run a design and build landscape company, so I lift a lot of stuff.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just wondering, last year I was pretty strapped up, tennis elbow and then a wrist brace, the whole bit. Is there something mechanical I can use and or exercises to work on this?
How long ago did you separate your shoulder?
Well, it was last season, landscape season, but then it got kind of cleared up, of course. I do a lot of logging in the winter,
okay.
So.
Okay. Usually a separated shoulder shouldn't bother you this far out. A separated shoulder is typically an acute problem. Now, it was separated and not dislocated. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay. Just for general information, a separated shoulder is the small joint on the top of your shoulder called the acromioclavicular joint, that little point that sticks up. That's a shoulder separation. A shoulder dislocation is when the ball and socket actually dislocate. And those are two really different problems, and they're approached differently. Separated shoulder, in most people, if it's a grade 1 or 2, is that what yours was? Or was it a more severe?
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty much healed up, and then somewhere this winter, January or something, I noticed, like, ooh, it's a little tender again.
Okay. All right. What I would suggest is going in and having it looked at. If you haven't had anyone look at it recently, because it's unlikely for the separation to be bothering you at this point in time. It's more likely a secondary problem, and somebody needs to sort out what that is, given the kind of work that you do. Chances are it's probably a rotator cuff problem. You could have little subacromial bursitis. Because of the shoulder problem last year and the elbow problem and the this and then that, you may have changed how you do things, and you may have injured something else. So I think kind of a good house cleaning, going in, having someone take a good look at you, look at the separation, look at the muscle balance, look at the strength, look at the mobility, then talking to you about how to move, how to lift, how to carry, how to push, how to pull, using that shoulder would be really useful, as well as a set of exercises to keep the whole limb strong.
Okay.
That's what I'd recommend.
Good luck.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've learned to work with more with my left side. How about that?
Well,
that's pretty handy.
Yeah, see, that's the substitution, though. And if your left side can handle it, that's okay. But then, you know, then you have the stuff in the middle, too. You have your back. You have your neck. When you change how you move and do things, you've been doing things a certain way for 50 years, and now you're changing them. Maybe your body will like it. Maybe it won't. You could create problems on the other side. So seeing somebody for one or two visits to get a strength program, you know, given the kind of work you do, you're a young man, you got a lot of years to haul gravel, I'd see somebody for a couple visits and kind of get on the right track.
By you mean see somebody, you mean a physical therapist?
See a physical therapist, yeah. I'll see a physical therapist.
I have to get a referral for that, do I not?
It depends upon your insurance company. Some insurance companies require one to be reimbursed. Our Practice Act doesn't require it in the state of Wisconsin, but sometimes the insurance company needs it to be reimbursed, and a call to your insurance carrier should sort it out. You've been seen for this problem before, so that makes it a little bit easier.
Good luck. Thanks, David, for calling. Appreciate it. Michael in Cambridge, hi to you.
Hello there.
Thanks for calling.
Okay. I had a torn meniscus in my knee, and it developed a cyst behind the knee. And I went in, and they drained the cyst, and it was good for about 5 years. I had no pain anymore, and then it started acting up again. So I went back in, and then they suggested the fixing the tear.
Uh-huh.
And they fixed the tear, and then they said down the road that the cyst and everything would go away eventually, and that should fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And now I've done all the physical therapy, and it seems like the cyst is coming back because there's pain in the lower leg again and in the foot where it actually keeps you up at night.
Okay. Did they do a meniscus repair, or did they take the torn meniscus out?
They took it out.
They took it
out. And they said I'd have to strengthen the knee that much more. So
Okay.
I've been doing it religiously and actually went back one time, and they said that that cyst should go away by just fixing the tear.
Okay.
But they really don't want to mess with it because they said it's next to some nerves.
Right, in the back of the knee.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Well, since your symptoms are returning, I think it'd be worthwhile to go back and let them know that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can only get good care if your care providers have information. So
right.
I think it's good to go back and let them know this is going on. Let them take another look and see what they think. You know, when you have a torn meniscus and you walk around on it for a bunch of years, you know, you can be okay, but it also can be wearing your joint surfaces down.
Okay.
And then now they've taken it out and they've changed the loading pattern across your knee. Your knee is being loaded in a different way than it has been for however many years of your life you've been walking around on it.
Right.
So sometimes your knee takes a lot of time to adapt to that change. Some knees adapt well. Other knees don't adapt very well at all to changes in loading patterns. So it may be that the PT is too fast. It's too aggressive for what your joint
right.
can tolerate. Or it could be that that your joint is just wearing out faster than anyone anticipated because of the change in loading pattern. So it'd be worthwhile to go back and let them know what's going on and consider slowing down the pace of your PT and seeing if that makes a difference.
Okay, but should that cyst eventually go away after the tear has been fixed, or does it need to get drained again?
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe, maybe not. It depends upon the location of the cyst and what caused it in the first place. Sometimes it's just a weakness in your joint capsule that that doesn't ever change. So what usually happens is you have a weak spot in your joint capsule, you have fluid in your knee because of the meniscus tear, and it causes that weak spot to kind of pouch out.
Yeah.
And hopefully after they take care of the tear, your knee doesn't swell anymore. But if your knee is swelling, then that tells me that your PT is too aggressive. Your knee isn't handling the loads for whatever reason, whether it's the PT, whether it's wear and tear of your joint surfaces, whether you have some rough ends of your meniscus. For some reason, your joint isn't tolerating what you're doing, and it's swelling again.
Well, when I went back, they put me on an exercise bike for a while, and they told just do the light.
Uh-huh.
Exercise for about a half hour at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did, and then it still wasn't getting any better. So when I went back again, they wanted me to PT more aggressively. So they said, turn up the exercise bike, that hasn't worked now either. So
no, I would have gone the other direction myself.
Okay.
I would have probably backed down and thought about a pool.
Mm-hmm.
To exercise someplace where you don't have so much weight on your joint, where your joint surfaces have a little more time to accommodate to the loads. Seems
okay.
That sounds a little aggressive to me.
Yeah, especially with the pain going down to your foot. It'd be one thing if you're just having a little bit of
leg and into the foot. Then.
Yeah.
It'd be one thing if you're just having a little bit of stiffness behind your knee, a little tightness back there. But when the pain starts moving, you know, away from the source of the symptoms, that means that things are getting aggravated.
Yeah. So go back. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Make it clear the symptoms that you're having. And it's time to modify some things again.
Yeah. And if they're unwilling to do so, you can always get a second opinion.
Yeah. Good luck, Michael. Thank you. Stephanie and Madison, your turn. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Larry. And hi to Bill and to Lori. I was listening. I was kind of doing some fast mental gymnastics, trying to figure out the best way to explain the situation so I'm not, you know, rambling and doing giving you guys more information, you know, than you need. So maybe I can start from the present, and then you can be asked the questions. I've had for years plantar fasciitis that was because I developed a bone spur from buying shoes that were ill-fitting, okay? That bone spur got bigger and bigger and bigger. I basically lived with the pain that would flare up off and on. I just treat it with ibuprofen, and things would be fine, and they'd go back to normal. Finally, what happened was about 2 years ago, I developed some really severe chronic pain, and it got to the point where it was really, really, really bad. And I went to – I now have a podiatrist who is treating me, and he sent me to physical therapy, and that helped a lot. I also was doing acupuncture. And the pain is now gone. He said the pain will eventually go away. It took a while. But I don't have pain anymore, but I have a numbness on one small spot on my foot. It's like literally the area, like the pointy part of the back, you know, of the heel where there's the edge where you've got the, you know, the plantar surface, the flat surface, and then the round, there's the edge, and then like kind of like up a little bit. So like if you took like the, you know, the palm of your hand and like put it like just on that pointing at the part right below the heel, right at, you know, the base of the foot. That's where it would be, the heel.
Okay.
Yep. So that's, and also I want to ask you, I would like to know how to see you guys. I've got, you know, I'm would like to go to UW Sports Medicine, and I actually asked once about Lori, and I think you just work with spine, but I know that people with these problems have had good success, like with water treatment and stuff too. I know you do water therapy with people, so.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like your pain is resolved. So
your pain is resolved, but I have numbness now. It's just flat out numb in that one area, and I'm kind of nervous about that. Is that, you know, is it just okay to let that go, or should I be treating that too? Because am I gonna cause permanent damage? The pain might. I used to really be really into exercise and walking and all kinds of things. I have a visual impairment. It did kind of get worse. But now I'm getting motivated really to go back into really, you know, be exercising again.
Okay. Well, let me talk. Is that the area of numbness, is it small? Does it cover a fourth of your foot, a half of your foot?
No, it's
just
very small. Just like, yeah.
You know, and if you don't have any other symptoms of systemic problems or something coming from your back, there's some small plantar nerves in the bottom of your foot, and wearing the shoes that were ill-fitting, they could have damaged a little superficial nerve that feeds a small area of your skin. It's not unlike what happens sometimes during surgery when they go in and make an incision. There'll be numbness in the area around where the incision was because some of those superficial nerves are cut. So unless there's any signs or symptoms of some bigger problem, I probably wouldn't lose any sleep over that. And I'd be happy that after all these years, you took care of your plantar fasciitis.
Yeah. Bill?
Yeah, I would agree. I think, you know, in the past, we've talked about concerns related to numbness and tingling, and you want to be careful with that. But like Lori said, if it's a really small area and numbness isn't spreading, and as long as you have no weakness around that foot or ankle, you're not tripping over your toes, your foot's not slapping down when you're walking, you're not having pain that's moving up the leg towards your back, then I would just kind of monitor it. And if it starts changing in that direction, then go in and get it checked. If you start getting numbness in the other foot, then you need to go in and see your physician as well. But there's lots of possible explanations why you've got that little spot. And I'm not hearing anything that would be a big warning sign to me either.
Okay.
Based on what you're telling us.
So that's the good news.
Thank you. Yeah, exactly.
And the plantar fasciitis, the pain is gone, which is also very good.
Yeah.
Thanks, Stephanie. Good luck. Thank you for calling. Nick in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Nick.
Hey. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm in some deep trouble here. I'm blonde and I'm dumb and I'm stupid, and I know, but I decided to move the entertainment stand out because my brother-in-law gave us a surround sound system.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, of course, I'm a man and I'm not going to ask for help to move it back. So I put my foot on there and I pushed as hard as I could and it slid across. And this has got like a 36-inch TV in there, so it's pretty heavy. Well, the next, this was on a Sunday, and Monday my knee just hurt. It's just painful. And I don't have insurance, so I went to the ER and I mean, that Monday, it was swollen up, geez, like three times the size of my other knee.
Oh
good grief.
And he goes, well, we really should tap it, but since you don't have insurance, I'm not going to do anything for you except for give you this brace that goes from your ankle to your thigh.
Ay, ay, ay.
And I've been wearing that, and it's getting better, but now it aches. And, like, right now I've got the neoprene brace on there, but it still hurts really bad, and it's swollen. And
now,
like I said, I don't have insurance, so I can't really go to the orthopedic, so.
Tell me again the mechanism of what happened. What did you do with your leg in the entertainment center?
I just put my leg like on there to push it back because I had pulled it out.
Okay.
To get to the wires.
So you sort of kneed it back into place?
Yeah, but with the bottom of my foot.
With the bottom of your foot, and you put the bottom of your foot on and you pushed it hard.
Yeah, I pushed it as hard as I could and it slid slowly back and I got it back though.
Okay. Yeah. All right. But you didn't have a twist or you didn't hyperextend or hyperflex or anything like that, your knee? It was just the pushing. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's still swollen. It's
still
really
swollen.
It's hot and.
Okay. Can you bend it, straighten it, all those
now
things?
Now I can, finally, yeah.
All the way?
Before I couldn't bend it at all because there's so much fluid in there.
Okay.
It felt
all
like
right.
There's a big golf ball in there.
Okay. And the last thing is, did it swell up right away or did it take a few hours?
It took the next day.
Okay. Sounds like a meniscus tear more than likely, given what you did and the onset of the swelling.
Okay.
Yeah, it's that's the cartilage that rests between your bones. And protects your joint surfaces and so on. And it gets injured with compressive type loads, usually in compress and rotation or a big compression. But because it because it doesn't have a blood supply much itself, the swelling usually comes on over a course of hours as the synovium gets stirred up and you end up with the synovitis.
Okay, now is that going to heal on its own? Because they gave me Vicodin, but that's like taking candy. It doesn't do anything.
No, that's just for the pain. Is it going to heal on its own? Good question. You don't know unless you know the location and size and direction of the tear. So, you know, tears that are in an area that have a vascular supply and that run in the same direction as the course of the fibers can heal on their own. Others that go across the fibers and are in the area that have no blood supply will not heal. And you know how you find that out? MRI.
Three letters.
Yep. About $2,000.
Yeah.
And a visit to the doctor.
Okay, now, is that going to bother me for the rest of my life then? Or?
It can. If you walk around with a meniscus tear, particularly through the weight-bearing portion of your gait cycle, it can wear out your joint surfaces, and you'll end up with bad degenerative joint disease. How old are you?
I'm 35, and now my other knee is actually starting to bother me because I'm walking kind of goofy.
Well, that helps.
Yeah, you're compensating.
It's interesting what they say, that you're right on the brink. It's funny you say 35, because the studies show that people under the age of 35, their knee will tolerate a meniscus tear pretty well. Those above 35, they see degeneration in about 5 years. So there's something right at the cusp of age 35 where your cells can't reproduce as well as they used to, and I can't tell you which side of 35 you're going to fall on. But I would say for the long-term health of your knee, you should suck it up and get it looked at, because you could have a lot of years of problems.
Okay, and will the brace help at all? Or?
No, it'll help make you feel better. The neoprene will help control the swelling.
Okay.
But icing, elevating, keep moving it within the comfortable range in the meantime.
Thing is, I work probably about 90 hours a week or every 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm constantly on my feet, and it's so hard being Irish and stubborn. I mean, if I would have just asked for help, but I was just too damn stubborn.
There's a lesson to be learned there.
Yeah. And in this case, it's going to cost you a couple of grand.
Yeah. You at least need to get that information. And then once you get the information, you can decide what to do with it. But you shouldn't make a decision like this in the absence of information.
Yeah. Good luck, Nick. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Pat in La Crosse. Hi to you.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a strange problem. When I walk, I'm pretty active. I probably walk 10, 15 miles a week, and I swim about 6 miles a week. When I walk, we live in a hilly area. When I'm going on the incline, my leg will ache, just like a toothache, from the knee up to my hip. I'll walk it out. I'll keep going, and when I go down, it feels better. I just can't shake it. It doesn't hurt any other time. I live in a two-story house. I am up and down the steps 20 times a day. My back is strong. I just carried up a 30-pound plant this morning from the downstairs and put it out on the deck. No problem. Knee did not hurt. Nothing hurts. But when I get up and I walk on the days that I walk, it'll hurt and ache. And I don't know what to do about it. I've started to take a few aspirin before I go out for a walk, just so it doesn't bother me as much.
Right. Pat, where in the leg again does the ache occur?
From probably the top of my knee up to my hip, or not quite as far as my hip, on my thigh.
Okay. And is it the back of your leg or front of your leg?
Front of my leg.
The front. Okay.
And sometimes it goes to the back. Sometimes I'll feel it actually go. It depends on. Some days it seems to move to the back and it'll be into my buttock.
Okay. All right. And how long have you had this?
I've had it for about a month. I thought it was my shoes. I used to be a runner.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, it's my shoe. I changed my shoe. I went to a sporting store, and I said, I need more stability. So they fitted me with a more stable shoe to hold my foot so I wouldn't turn or pronate, but it didn't help.
Okay.
Okay.
And it's just one leg?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
the
one
other one's
side.
Fine. And the rest of the day, while I'm swimming, nothing. While I'm around the house, yesterday I worked in the yard, walked the yard, carried things across the yard for 3 hours, never hurt. But the minute I get on the blacktop and start walking and I go on an incline.
Yeah. Okay. Well, a couple things. First of all, the fact that it's been going on for a month, and it sounds like it's not getting any better, I would recommend that you go in and get examined. You know, physical therapists can examine you everywhere from your back to your hip to your knee. Since you're up on your feet walking, also look at your feet. You take in your footwear when you go in.
Okay.
And they'll do some testing of muscle groups in terms of strength as well as flexibility issues. And see if they can isolate it down. It could be that their joints are being stressed differently when you walk uphill versus downhill. Certain muscle groups are asked to work a lot harder when you go uphill versus downhill. Mm-hmm. And so it would take an examination kind of from your legs on up into your trunk to try to sort out why this has started and why it's not getting any better. Now, I didn't hear you say anything about numbness or tingling, anything like that?
No, no numbness.
Okay.
Nothing occurs like that.
Good.
The only time I've ever noticed an onset of it is I'm an outdoor person. I do have a treadmill. Mm-hmm. But I get very bored with the treadmill, so when I do get on it, I'm inclined to run.
Okay.
And it'll feel fine, but then I notice it's sore after that, so I've cut the treadmill out for a month now.
Okay.
And it doesn't seem to.
And is it the same kind of soreness you get when you walk uphill? All right. So again, it sounds like when you pick up the exertion, the activity, the intensity of the activity is when the symptoms come on.
Mm-hmm.
So again, if this has just been going on for a few days, maybe a week, I'd say just slow down, do other things, but avoid walking up the hill. Maybe do more swimming versus walking for a while. But the fact it's been a month, I think it'd be a good time to get this checked so you can maintain your healthy lifestyle.
Well, yes, I biking is coming up now, and I'm an avid biker, and I'm getting ready to do the 100-mile ride this fall. So I
know.
Okay.
Good for
good
you.
Shape.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Not bad for a 65-year-old lady.
Ah,
huh?
Good for you. Good for you. Yeah.
Good.
This has come up, and it's sort of disheartening for me.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. There's something, there must be something about your posture, the forward lean of the uphill, the forward lean on the treadmill, or about the intensity. The bike, you're going to end up with a forward lean probably also.
Right.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll take someone with a good exam to sort out the source of the problem.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Pat. Appreciate it. We're talking aches and pains and sprains and strains with our two guests today, Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, associate professor at the UW Medical School. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking physical therapy issues today with Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody. Thanks for listening in. Give us a call if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Let's turn to Jan in Independence next. Jan, hello.
Hello. I'm 70, and the pain in my knees and hips and joints vanished when I tried some home tricks. May I share a couple of them?
Oh, please do.
Okay, I got some of those art supports from the Good Feet store,
mm-hmm.
and the pain that I experienced on the incline suddenly stopped. I think my leg bone was off balance, and even though I had great walking shoes, that they didn't seem to have enough art support, so that did it for me. The other thing was I sprained my ankle a few years back, and it was so sore I thought I broke my leg. My husband knew an ancient remedy. It's called a hot and cold fomentation. So he put a wastebasket full of water as hot as I could stand and one with ice water floating in it in front of me and said, put your foot in the hot water 3 minutes, in the ice water 1 minute, back and forth 3 times each. Well, he went out on the porch, and I kept on doing it 5 times. And he came back, and he said, how's your ankle? I said, I haven't thought about it. I got up, wiped my foot, the pain vanished, and it never came back. He explained that it works like a heat pump, mm-hmm. in which the hot water opens up the blood vessels, releasing the swelling that's pressing on your nerves, and then the cold, it brings in fresh, new, healing blood, and it works.
Mm-hmm.
They've done this for thousands of years. It's an old remedy. The other thing was that my health completely failed at 40, and I switched my diet. I became a vegetarian, and I didn't know how to cook it, so I ate it raw, and I accidentally got well from head to foot. 2 weeks later, my AMA doctor said, Jen, keep it up. It's working. You're not anemic for the first time in 39 years, and my beautician said, what are these half-inch high dark brown hairs coming back up all over your scalp a month later? And I now have thick dark brown hair down to my shoulders, and I'm 70, as I said.
Oh, good for you.
Good for you.
What, another testament to healthy living.
Yeah, this is my final statement. I found, for me, the perfect secret of health is to eat the food God has made and don't cook it to death.
Oh, yeah, I'll second that one. Yeah.
Jan,
oh,
thank you.
That's all great. Yeah. That's all great. Yeah, the contrast, we call it contrast baths, the hot and cold, but we often prescribe that for treatment because her husband is right, that the warmth causes some dilation of your vessels and then the cold causes constriction. And it does work a bit like a pump to move fluid out, so... we often prescribe those, and always good healthy eating.
And always good healthy. Thanks, Jan. Thank you very much for calling. And Pam in Spring Green, your turn. Hi, Pam.
Hi, thank you. Something was said just a few minutes ago about getting the feeling of your foot slapping down when you walk.
Yes.
And as preface to this, I took a long course of Flagyl that I had to get off of for a GI problem because my feet were getting numb and cold. And they persisted that way. The doctors didn't think too much of it. They tested to make sure I had some feeling with that little prick.
Yes.
And I do. But even now, the bottoms of my feet are ultra exquisitely sensitive to touch. And I do get that feeling in my right foot often when I walk that I'm sort of picking it up and slapping it down.
Yes.
So what does that mean?
Well, typically, in the combination of things you describe, you have to worry about a combination of either issues with nerves being compressed, nerves inflamed, and or circulation. In context of the previous call with the foot slap, there are certain nerves of the body that innervate muscles on top of the foot and the ankle, and if those nerves are being compressed, those muscles aren't going to work, and we can't control our foot. So when we walk, heel comes down first, and then the rest foot comes down slow and gradually. And if you lose that strength, you lose that control, then the front of your foot will slap down. And you can hear people walking down the hallway. One side sounds different than the other.
Yeah.
But all the things you described, the numbness, the cold, the hypersensitivity, and this potential foot slap tie into the nervous system and potential circulatory system as well.
Huh. Okay.
And I'm assuming you're seeing somebody for these issues?
Well,
a physician?
The last time I went in, I saw my doctor at the UW, and she ran the usual tests and didn't seem terribly concerned about it since I did have feeling with that little wire prick that she uses.
And how long ago was that visit?
Oh, about a month.
Okay, about a month.
Yeah.
All right, and it sounds like things are not any better, correct?
Well, it's no, not really. It doesn't happen all the time. It's and my feet are not cold anymore. That's gone away.
Okay.
My local doctor out here said after that long course of Flagyl could take as much as 6 months to come back to normal.
Okay. All right.
And I my feet feel perfectly normal right now, but if I take my shoes and socks off and walk around on the cold floor or touch the bottoms of my feet or my toes, they're just super, super sensitive.
Then they're sensitive. Mm. Well, I would keep in touch with your local physician. If you start noticing things changing for the worse, that's who you should contact and go in. Since they know your history, they've seen you, they've got baseline information, just monitor so they can monitor you to make sure that things aren't going in the wrong direction in terms of the nerves and circulation.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Pam. Marie in Duluth, Minnesota. It's your turn. Hi, Marie.
Hello. I just have a very quick question. The area on the side of my ankle bone on my left foot, I get a periodic shooting pain. And at times, that heel is a bit sore. Now, I can't relate it to any exercise that I do. In other words, walking or, well, anything, cross-country skiing. And it comes and goes sporadically. I haven't been able to identify at all how it relates to anything that I do.
Is it on the bone on the inside of your ankle or the outside? Okay.
Outside, right below, right, you know, there's sort of an area behind behind the ankle bone before you get sort of to the back of the foot.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, and that little space?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And it shoots. It just shoots, and, I mean, it's not excruciating, but it hurts.
And is it the tendon?
It's not the tendon.
It's not the tendon.
Nope. So, you mean the tendon in back.
Right, the thick tendon in back.
I don't think it has anything to do with the tendon because it is closer to the front.
Okay. And how long does it take for that to go away?
Oh, sometimes it'll last for 5-10 minutes, sometimes okay. a couple, 3 minutes, and then it'll be gone. And then all of a sudden, it'll reappear for without a reason that I can identify.
Okay. It's a little hard to say. That doesn't fit the typical pattern of many things that we see. If you're flat-footed, you can be getting some compression there on that side, and so
I don't think I am. I think I have a pretty good arch.
Okay, all right. Then another possibility is you have a couple tendons that run behind that ankle bone,
mm-hmm.
and you may, you know, they slide through a sheath, and they may be getting caught up on the sheath or on the band that holds them in place behind your ankle bone, and that can kind of cause a sharp pain. And then it goes away. So there may be a little bit of instability there in those tendons. I don't have any other ideas. So if you really want to get to the source of it, you're going to have to go in and let someone take a look at it and see if they can actually put their finger on what's hurting and where it hurts. There's, like I said, there's a few things back there, primarily those tendons, a couple tendons behind that ankle bone, and the band that holds them in place. There's also a bursa back there. So
I have, you know, I have mentioned it to my internist, and I just had a physical at Mayo, and I mentioned it there several times. No one has reacted to it, as if it'll come and go, is the impression I'm getting.
Yeah, I mean, if something comes and it's persistent and it's you know, keeping you from doing the things that you need to do and it, you know, lasts for days, then people start to take notice. But when things kind of come and go and they last for less than 10 minutes, and particularly if they're not predictable, if you can't find a pattern to it, it makes it really hard to treat. The question is, what would you do about it? If you can't predict when it's going to come on, what would you change?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's the problem.
So I can see why they kind of shrug their shoulders over it.
So maybe if it continues, is the answer having it checked by a podiatrist?
We find someone who specializes in the anatomy of the foot and ankle, muscles, tendons, bones, who can take a look at the biomechanics and at the anatomy and see if they can figure out what's going on.
Yeah, my major concern was not doing anything and that I would exacerbate something. But in other words, it shouldn't hurt to walk and exercise and bike and all of that.
No.
I mean, it shouldn't make it worse.
Yeah,
I would assume.
Well, by your report, it doesn't, because you said you can't find any pattern to it.
I can't.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not seeing any warning signs either. So, Maria, what would tell you that it's getting worse? These episodes become more frequent.
Yeah.
It takes longer for them to go away.
Okay.
It becomes more intense. And so if you see that kind of pattern, that's when it would warrant a good examination.
So grin and bear it till it goes away.
Yeah, or it gets worse.
Or it gets worse. Yeah. That's right, in those within those parameters.
Okay, thanks. I just thought you might have just the magic answer for me.
Well, they have a lot of magic answers, but this may not be one.
Yeah.
Thanks, Marie.
I left my magic wand at home today.
Tim and Hudson, hello.
Hi. Got a little bit of an odd question. You guys probably hear it all the time, though. My knees have been hurting basically pretty much nonstop since puberty. I'm 22 now. I've gone in and got them checked out, so probably half a dozen times. And every time they take x-rays of my knees and they say, oh, everything looks fine, you know, try a few of these exercises. I try the exercises, nothing helps. And then, you know, basically never end up going back. One of the doctors said that my kneecaps were in the wrong place, that they're riding too far to the outside.
Okay.
And, I mean, this knee pain is, you know, most of the time pretty severe. At the end of a hard day's work, my knees feel very weak, you know, very not fatigued, but that feeling when you've done way too much hard work and you just can't, no matter how much you try, you can't make muscle do what it's supposed to. Kind of feels really loose and wobbly. And the only time that it has stopped hurting, when I was about 18, I rode freestyle BMX, you know, riding bikes, doing, you know, basically trick-type things on bikes. And it seemed to be a lot of, you know, overall, all-around knee exercise really seemed to help.
Okay.
And now I actually install satellites, so I climb up steep pitch roofs and things like that, which I know is not the best for my knee, but the money is great.
And is it, where does it hurt? Does it hurt in front and back?
It seems to just be a general overall knee pain.
Okay.
The muscles on the side, the back is about the only spot that it only hurts when it's getting really bad.
Okay. So you would call it a generalized ache over the front of your knee?
Yeah, the front.
Okay.
Is, yeah.
And can you put your finger on any spot that hurts?
No, not really. Like, it feels like, you know, I can't, like, if I touch it, it doesn't hurt.
Okay.
But if I move it, you're darn right it hurts.
Okay.
And if I put a lot of weight on it, yes, it hurts quite a bit.
And no swelling?
And for a while, they put me on Vioxx.
Okay.
And they were giving me, basically told me to take it as needed.
Mm-hmm.
And I would take one Vioxx every 2 or 3 days, and the pain would go away.
Okay.
But I went back to that same doctor after they removed Vioxx from the market, and he gave me, you know, we went through the whole plethora of drugs to try and, you know, that were in a similar okay. family, and that was the only one that ever worked.
Okay. And do you have any swelling?
Not noticeable.
Okay. Have you seen a physical therapist?
That doctor ended up sending me to a physical therapist, and they gave me, this was when I was, I want to say 17 or 18.
Okay.
And they gave me some exercises, but I did the exercises regularly for, you know, 2 months, and to no improvement.
We're going to have to ponder that range of issues, Tim, and we'll think about that over the news, and we will get back to you with some sterling answers, I'm sure, from our two guests, Laurie Tynebrody and Bill Boisenault. We'll be with us right up till 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. You know, when you hear about stories like the Virginia Tech story, it's, you know, sometimes your own
perspective.
Aches and pains don't feel quite so bad.
Yeah.
But we've got a lot of people who are dealing with aches and pains, so let's try and deal with the ones we have here and hope for the best for all the people in Virginia.
Exactly.
And Tim in Hudson is with us, and Tim has had knee problems, knee pain since puberty, and you two talked a little about it. What have you
You say puberty, the first thing you think of is growth-related issues. So around the front of the knee, you get what are called apophysitis, and that's where the muscles attach to the bone, and sometimes those become painful around puberty because you're growing so fast. At the tip of the kneecap, there's a problem called Sinding-Larsen-Johansson, and down where the big quadriceps tendon attaches in the tibia, the shin bone, is called Osgood-Schlatter's. And there's also another problem that often manifests as knee pain that's actually a problem with the hips called slipped capital femoral epiphyses. But as Bill and I talked, it'd be hard to imagine that he could have gone this long with that kind of a problem without having some hip pain as well. So I don't know if Tim has had any hip pain or has had his hips checked. But if he hasn't, that'd be something to consider. Those things aside, you know, symptoms sound generally more related to patellofemoral problems, especially since somebody said his kneecaps sit too far to the outside. And he had improvement with biking. A lot of repetitive biking can actually lubricate the patellofemoral joint. I think given that he hasn't seen a physical therapist since he was 17, it'd be a good idea to go in and have somebody look at him again today. Check his hips, make sure that the hips are okay, check the position of his kneecap, maybe do some taping for his kneecap if that's the problem, rule out some of those apophysitis problems that can continue into maturity as things like patellar tendonitis. Just because he pokes around his knee and can't find any tenderness, actually patellar tendonitis tends to hide on the undersurface of the tendon. So unless you tip your kneecap up and get your finger underneath the kneecap and palpate in there, sometimes people can miss things like patellar tendonitis. So I think he needs a good evaluation by a good orthopedic or sports physical therapist to sort out the source of these problems.
Good luck, Tim. Thank you very much. Jeff in Sun Prairie, we turn to you next. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have got a right shoulder rotator cuff tear. I've been to an OT doctor and to physical therapy about 4 times, and I'm currently doing the rubber band type stretching and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got an appointment with the doctor tomorrow, with the OT doctor, or the ortho doctor tomorrow. And I'm just wondering if I end up deciding to have surgery on this, I'm just not sure what type of recovery success they've had with surgery. I've heard a lot of different and varying accounts of success and and non-success with,
right.
with having
yeah.
surgery. So I'm just wondering. And we start our golfing season, of course, Thursday mm-hmm. night.
Oh, of course, of course.
And I was told I could participate in golf if I took it easy.
Okay.
So,
well, you bring up a really good point, and that is, you know, our rotator cuff tear is not a rotator cuff tear. It's not a rotator cuff tear. So people tell you all kinds of stories of success and failure, but everyone's an individual case, particularly in the case of rotator cuffs. You can have complete tears. You can have partial tears. You can have acute tears. You can have chronic overuse tears, and they all have a different prognosis, and they all respond differently to surgical interventions. In fact, you know, an acute tear with a rupture has a very different prognosis than somebody who has a chronic tear, in which case they go in and they rarely actually repair the tendon. What they do is they go in and they take away some bone and some bursa, and they make more room for the remaining tendon. So they're very different surgical procedures. So given that, you need to talk to your surgeon and find out, you know, did you have a complete tear? Did you have an injury with a complete tear or a partial tear? Do you know?
I'm not sure. The physical therapist tells me that it was probably torn from I drive all day,
mm-hmm.
and he thinks that this was done over a long period
right.
of time.
Okay.
And he thinks that part of the muscle is atrophied because
okay.
it has probably happened a while ago.
Okay.
And I'm not real sure. He just told me he thought it was a large tear.
Okay.
Okay. And I am going to get, I think, an MRI and possibly cortisone, according to my physician.
Okay. That all makes sense. That all makes sense. If you have a chronic problem, they're not going to go in and repair your rotator cuff.
Okay.
But they're going to do some studies, find out how big your tear is and what the status of all the other soft tissues in the area are. If they did surgery, what they would do is they'd go in and they'd clean out and make more space for whatever remaining rotator cuff tendon you might have, if you have any. And the shot they do kind of as an experiment to see if you would be a good candidate for the surgery. What they should do is inject the bursa above your rotator cuff tendon, not injecting the tendon. And if you get relief from that, then they feel better, more confident that you might be a good candidate for a successful surgery where they go in and actually take out that bursa and they shave off some of the bone that sits over your rotator cuff. So they get the idea that if they give you a little more space, your shoulder's going to feel better. So it sounds like you're getting the right kind of care. Yeah.
And Jeff, when you go in, I would bring in to see the surgeon, bring in a list of questions.
Okay.
You know, asking specifically what type of tear is it, and if they're going to do surgery, what were they doing during the surgery. And then they should be able to describe to you the potential outcomes or prognosis after the type of procedure they're going to do specifically for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that helps.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
Because there's a lot of – I've talked to a number of different people, and everybody's got their own story. So I was a little concerned about that.
Right. Everyone has their own story, and you need to get information to write your story.
Okay.
Thanks,
well,
Jeff.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yep.
All right.
Appreciate it very much. Brian and Madison, your turn. Hi, Brian.
How you doing today?
Good.
Good. A couple of years ago, I had a little fall on the curling ice and jammed my shoulder into the ice and subsequently saw a physical therapist about it and through exercises and some strengthening exercises alleviated the pain that came with that. But I had my neck continued to crack in a way that it didn't previously, and just recently this past spring, on those warm days when we still had snow and cold nights, I slipped on some black ice and kind of jammed my hand in the fall on the sidewalk, and didn't really have any swelling, but sort of have a stiffness and a pressure built up in some of the knuckles in my hand that really seemed to be only alleviated by cracking the knuckle. And I was just curious what actually is happening when you're cracking a knuckle, and is that something that I should be concerned about? You know, is there something loose in there? Is it just a little bit of air?
Yeah, the noises that we can get, cracking knuckles is one example. Generally, the theory behind when you crack our knuckles and you get the noise is that the fluid changes inside the joint. A gas bubble develops and collapses quickly, and that can give you the pop. And if it is a mechanism, generally you'll crack your knuckles, and then you try to crack them right again, and you can't. You have to wait 15, 20 minutes, maybe 3 minutes before you can actually crack your knuckles again. And so that's usually tied to this gas bubble forming and then collapsing. You can get noise around a joint for tendons slipping or sliding over a bony prominence. Sometimes joint surfaces rubbing against a joint surface will give you some clicking or popping or cracking. So there's some different mechanisms. Generally, I don't worry about noise like that as long as you're, if you talk about your hand in particular, as long as your fingers or hand joints aren't getting stuck in place, as long as you don't feel like they're subluxing, they're slipping out of place, as long as there's no sharp pain associated with that noise,
right.
Noise is not that unusual. And especially when you've had traumas like this, you may have a little bit underlying swelling that could lead to a tiny bit of laxity, and the tendon sliding through the sheath can be changed biomechanically as that area heals. But those are usually the parameters that I use in terms of noises like that.
Okay. But would joints like that or knuckles like that be specific places maybe later in life where arthritis would focus?
Well, it's unusual. I think if you're cracking your knuckles 30, 40, 50 times a day, that can lead to laxity and that could lead to some joint degeneration. And I know a few people who do crack their knuckles consistently, continually, and it would be the same at any joint. But it would probably take that degree of stress over periods of months and years to lead to joint damage like that.
Hmm.
So it'd be the type of thing that if you feel that the need to crack your knuckles, if you need to do it more and more and more often, you start noticing some swelling around the joints, then that's a different story. Then I'd go in and have that hand examined.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot,
Good luck.
Brian. Bob in La Crosse, your turn now. Hi, Bob.
Good afternoon. Ever since I've been a child, whenever I try to participate in any kind of activities like cross-country skiing or rollerblading or ice skating or anything, where the shoe or boot that I'm wearing doesn't allow the normal flexing of my foot, after about half an hour, I get just severe sharp pains in the arch of my foot, both feet. And I don't know what causes it. I'm on my feet all day. I can play basketball. I can go biking. I can do anything as long as I'm wearing normal shoes. I've never had any problems. But it's just when I wear something with a shoe or boot with a real rigid sole, it doesn't allow my feet to flex.
Hmm. Boy, I can't say that I've encountered that kind of complaint before. It hurts. Is it numb or tingling?
No, it feels like somebody's sticking a knife right in the bottom of my foot, right in the arch.
Interesting. Well,
you know, and if I stop, I can stop and rest for a little while, and it'll go away. But once it has started, it comes back really fast.
Okay. You know, all I can say is there's something about the mechanics of foot and ankle movement. I mean, your shoes are designed to allow flexing at your ankle, and then really remarkably precise, what we call triplane motion at your subtalar joint. And then flexion at your toe joints. And for some reason, if you're wearing something that's really rigid, that movement can't occur at those joints. So that movement has to occur someplace else. Mm-hmm. And apparently your body or your joints aren't allowing that movement to occur elsewhere, and it's just creating pain in your foot. I can't tell you what to do about it other than if you want to participate in those things, you need to find something that has a flexible shoe that will allow some flex in your foot, either at your ankle joint or your toe joints or midfoot, to allow normal biomechanics of your foot.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can add more than that outside of, you know, Bob, I don't know about the shape of your feet. You know, for myself, for example, I have really flat feet, and I cannot go and rent ski boots from the shop like everybody else uses and wear them and be comfortable for any length of time, ice skating. When I just go to the place to skate and rent skates, they would never fit my feet well, and within 10, 15 minutes, Bob's my feet were painful because they didn't fit me well. And the shoes I wear day to day, I buy them specially made for my feet. So it may be that for those kinds of activities, you need to get a boot that fits you, that it's designed for you, and you're not getting one off the rack when you do go into ski, as an example.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's worth a thought.
Okay.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
Good luck.
And Lisa in Luxembourg, hello to you.
Hi. I have this problem. When I sit down for long periods of time, after I get up, I have such extreme pain in my hip joints that it makes it difficult to walk. I can continue to walk, but it's just very painful then for the rest of the day. If I'm up walking around all day, I don't have any problems. It's just when I stop and sit for any amount of time and then I get up is when the pain comes on.
Okay.
And Lisa, is it pain and stiffness, or just is it more aching as opposed to stiffness?
More of an aching. It doesn't feel stiff. Okay. It's just it aches really bad.
Okay, and it's in both hips?
Yep, it's in both hips.
All right. Any other joints ache once you get up?
No, it's just my hip joints.
Okay. All right. Well, there are certain kinds of conditions, and sometimes a little bit of arthritis, you will get more pain, but usually there's stiffness associated with it, with static positions or postures. So it's not uncommon for people to have a little bit of degeneration at their knees when they first stand up. The knee is stiff and sore and creaky, but they take some steps, it starts to loosen up, and then it feels better. And again, how long has this been going on?
It's been going on for about 3 months now.
Okay. All right. It's not getting any better.
No. And at my job, when I'm at my job, I'm on my feet 80% of the time.
Yeah.
And those days I'm fine. It's just when I stop and sit down at the end of the day or, you know, even the middle of the day for my lunch break,
yeah,
and then I get up to return to work, it's very painful.
Okay. All right. Well, I would recommend, since it's been going on for 3 months, to be examined. See a physical therapist who I would expect them to be looking at not just your hips, but also your low back.
Okay.
Talk to you about the types of chairs that you sit in. Is there a back support that may help you with this hip pain? Sometimes the height of the chair can make a difference. The tilt of the seat can make a difference in terms of the stresses on the back and or the hip area.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if it had just been a couple of weeks, I'd probably make a different recommendation. But for 3 months, and it's not getting any better, that's what I recommend, that you go in and be examined. But low back, as well as the hip area, and talking lots about the types of chairs you sit in,
mm-hmm,
and come from a postural standpoint.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Good luck.
Thanks, Lisa, for calling. Take a picture of those chairs. Take it in with you.
Well, yeah, if possible. Yeah. Yeah, that'd be helpful.
A digital shot of the picture of right, the chairs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cliff and Dousman, hi to you.
Hi, this is his wife talking right now.
Okay.
He's had a back surgery in 04 and 05. First one was through the back. Mm-hmm. The second one was through the front. And he is still having pain down into his leg and his ankle. What else, honey? And then he also has a fentanyl patch he wears and a TENS unit.
Okay.
And we're wondering what kind of therapy or what he could do. I'm going to give you him.
Okay.
Okay?
All right. That sounds fine.
Here you are.
Hello.
Hi, Cliff. Greetings. I'm assuming that your second surgery, at least, so they did a fusion? Or did they do a disc replacement?
Yeah, I had a fusion.
Okay. All right. And I'm assuming you saw a physical therapist along the way?
I never went to a therapist, no.
Okay.
I'm trying acupuncture right now.
Okay. All right. Well, I think it's important that you see a physical therapist. And they should, at this stage, being this far out from the surgery, my guess is that you would need a lot of rehabilitation from a flexibility standpoint and also a strengthening standpoint. And
I'm going to give you back to my wife.
Okay.
Here, I can't hear very well.
Okay. Sure.
You can't hear? Okay. I have to be his ears.
That's all right.
You bet. You know, my recommendation is that Cliff should see a physical therapist. And he'll need exercise rehabilitation for more than just his back. flexibility around the hips and legs is very important to keep pressure off the back, a core stabilization program. It may be that he may need to start in a pool, depending on how painful that leg is and how limited he is in terms of activity. Mm-hmm. But this far out from surgery, it's time that he was placed in a good rehabilitation program. Things like a TENS unit is good for gating pain in many cases, but it's not going to rehabilitate muscle groups in terms of strength and flexibility.
Right.
If the TENS unit helps or the acupuncture helps from a pain reduction, that will mean he can tolerate a more aggressive rehabilitation program. But he needs a rehabilitation program in addition to the things that he's currently doing.
Okay, he should just go to his doctor or go to a therapist right away?
Well, I think like you mentioned before, something dependent on your insurance plan.
Because the doctor didn't even suggest therapy.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, you could call the physical therapy clinic or department that's in your area, and you can let them know the kind of insurance that your husband has, and they can tell you whether you need a physician referral or not. Mm-hmm. And if so, I'd like to think just a phone call into your physician's office would be enough that they would give you a referral, him a referral to go and see a physical therapist.
Yeah. Good luck.
Okay, yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling. And Barry in Rensselaer, Indiana. Hi, Barry.
I have knee problems. It started out in middle school with puberty. I was diagnosed with, I can't remember the name of it. It was the big, where they pulls the tendons from your upper leg, pulls on the bone under your lower leg right there at the growth plate.
Right, Osgood-Schlatter's?
Yes, that's okay. Exactly what I was diagnosed with. They told me that through puberty that would go away, which it did.
Mm-hmm.
I went on to join the military, and I did a tour in Korea mm-hmm. in 89, or 98 and 99, and I had a sergeant over there to run me a lot
mm-hmm.
up and down a hill.
Mm-hmm.
And the downhill just tore up my knee.
Oh, yeah.
I got out with a medical discharge, 20% disability. They diagnosed it as what they call patellofibular pain syndrome.
Okay.
They've done everything, physical therapy, x-rays. The only things they haven't done is what they call exploratory surgery
mm-hmm.
and an MRI.
Mm-hmm.
And they have never gotten the problem fixed. I have had to switch jobs from being a mechanic to a truck driver to get off of my knee to be able to
do this. And since we're running so short a time, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Let's see if we can get some help.
For physical therapy, if they haven't tried any taping around your kneecap, for some people who have had a history of problems around their kneecap, sometimes taping helps, or some special braces that have a hole cut out for your kneecap, as well as the flexibility and strengthening. So that can help with your kneecap symptoms. Also, if they haven't done an MRI, sometimes problems inside your knee can present as problems outside your knee. So getting an MRI, if you fail a good, thorough course of physical therapy, is not unreasonable. This is not something I would go to surgery to because you're just fishing and have no idea
right.
what you're going in there for.
So don't do that.
I wouldn't go
Not
with
yet.
That. I would
Not
no.
Yet.
I would start with another course of physical therapy. Make sure they include some taping. And there's a lot of research now on strengthening around the hip. You know, we make a big deal out of core strength. So working on that as well.
And thanks very much. Good luck, Barry. Thank you very much for calling, Lori and Bill. Thank you so much. We'll see you in
you
about
bet.
A month.
Yes,
you bet.
Pleasure as always.
Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, associate professor at the UW Medical School. They'll be back in a month, and we'll talk with them again. I'll be off tomorrow. Actually, we'll be covering live the coverage of Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, his presentations before Congress. That'll be tomorrow. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network.